seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner. For Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. If they Irish Open, of course you want to play at the weekend.
You're very welcome along. It's Golf Weekly. If you're listening on podcast, as ever, friends of the pod, you are most welcome. If you're listening on Facebook Live, watching on Facebook Live or any of our social channels, you're very welcome. We're going to try and stream this thing on an ongoing basis, generally around 1 o'clock, 1:30 today, a bit later today. Lots going on. Nathan Murphy involved in some high-powered meetings. Hello, Nathan.
How are you? Oof.
Very high-powered.
Things are happening.
Big things are happening.
Doesn't look good for you, Joe, I won't lie.
It's been that kind of fortnight. So I tell you what, big news. We got a good competition.
Oof.
Good competition. So as you know, we have a sponsor now, Nathan.
I love them.
I'm sure your bank balance is reflecting that.
Yours not. Again, that's what these high-powered meetings are about.
Yes. So La Cala, Spain's largest golf resort, Irish-owned as well by FBD Hotels and Resorts, has come on as sponsors. They have a 3-18-hole golf course resort in near Mijas in Spain.
Oh, Mijas, love that place.
We do. Europa, Asia and America are the three courses, and a 6-hole par 3 as well. State-of-the-art spa, 107-bedroom hotel. They have UEFA standard training pitches as well, which attract a host of top European sides each year, I'm told.
It's the...
Recently, the filming location for Harry's Heroes in 2019, when Harry Redknapp and the English legends took on the Germany legends. You know that?
No, I didn't see it.
There you go.
Watch it.
There you go. So,
Nico Kranjčar playing?
Don't know. I'm sure they found a way of getting him in. Residency rule, surely, at this
surely,
stage.
Surely.
So exciting news. We have a brilliant competition.
Ooh.
We didn't think it was right that we would yap on here about La Cala and not let the listeners in on the good stuff. So for the sake of a single tweet, listeners, you can be with a chance to win three nights stay, 4-2, flights included.
What?
Yeah. Three nights stay, 4-2, flights included, and two rounds of golf on your choice of those three courses in La Cala, either the Europa, America, or Asia course, and that's in Mijas, southern Spain, in 2020. All you have to do to win that prize is answer the following question. Couldn't be easier. Name the four men's major winners 2019.
Oof.
The way you enter is to go to either Both Work, the Off the Ball Twitter page, or the Golf Weekly OTB Twitter page, and reply. You'll see the question posed in a tweet. Reply to that tweet and be sure to include, this is very important, you will not be eligible if you don't include hashtag LaCala, LACALA 2020 in your reply. So basically, we're going to run this over the next 4 weeks, and you can enter each week. You can enter once each week. You can't enter dozens of times each week. You can enter once each week. That will increase your chances of being picked at random.
And just some random advice for people entering any competition.
Sure.
If you enter 100 times, you're never going to get picked.
Yeah, just enter once each week. But you can enter
exactly.
Each week.
Each,
enter
week. Each week is perfectly fine.
Yeah, once
That's
a week.
That's a great prize.
Equally, if you just want to enter this week and don't enter the other 3 weeks, you're still in the mix. You're in the hat. It's a nice prize, isn't it?
That's a great prize.
Yeah.
Sometime in 2020. Nice weekend south of Spain.
Yeah. Three nights, flights for two rounds of golf. You pick the two courses you want
to
play.
Bring a mate.
You don't have to. Bring one of us.
Really?
The winner will be announced on the live Golf Weekly show.
I really hope our listener
picks you.
Asks Joe to go.
Oh, that week. Such a bad week
really,
for me.
Really tough. Yeah.
October 3rd is when we'll announce the winner. Okay. That is our business done. Good prize. That's good.
It's a great prize.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move things on. A few tweets before we get to Peter Lawrie. Kevin wants to know how much equipment doping goes on, does Peter think?
I have seen pictures of equipment stripped back naked, looking incredible after pre-season.
Are we calling it equipment doping, really? Are we?
Equipment...
You're not injecting anything into the equipment.
Well, maybe you're injecting some sort of precious metal that is banned.
They're just not adhering strictly to the specification rules. But I don't know if it's equipment doping. I don't know if we want to be talking about that.
What are we calling it then? If we could come up with a catchy title now, this could be our legacy.
Uncompliant equipment doesn't quite do it for me. I'll admit that.
Equipment doping is catchier.
It's definitely catchier. Club doping. We'll ask Peter how much of it he thinks is going on. Or if he knows, or how much interest players
has he ever club doped? You better ask him.
These are the questions.
You better ask him.
Niall Sweeney, the Tour Championship final round took under 4 hours. The slow play issue was getting better. Why was it two ball, in fairness?
Oh, Exactly.
Is conditions two ball?
Two ball, conditions are perfect.
Yeah, I don't know if it suddenly got better. Under 4 hours. What should a two ball take you around your local course?
3 hours, 45 minutes?
Even 3.5 if you were both giving each other a few putts and zipping around, yeah. So maybe under four is okay for professionals. King of Wessex, apparently the next season of the PGA Tour has started. When does it really start? Like, when will the top players start? Wonders the King of Wessex.
Well, we touched on this last week, I think, that we'll get excited about the Tournament of Champions. Wonder, will Rory go to Hawaii again? So you'll have a decent field there, but really, you're talking Torrey Pines right at the end of January.
Yeah,
I would suspect it's the first time you probably maybe get Tiger, Rory together.
We're still in the early stages of this wraparound season, King of Wessex. Generally, sponsors will shell out a few quid to get a reasonably big name there, or two.
One or two.
So we had Bubba Watson
and Bryson
there last week. You might get a sprinkling here or there if it suits them, but really, and not until the 2020 calendar year starts, I think. And then Andrew Cushion. Qualifying starts at Wentworth for the Ryder Cup. Any Ryder Cup predictions? Hashtag friend of the pod. Haven't even thought about it, really.
Victor Hovland.
Really? Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
He's at Wentworth this week. Sponsor's invite.
Yes. Victor Hovland, right. Our good friends at 15th Club. I say good friends because I steal all their statistics, don't pay them, and they've yet to sue us.
Yeah.
So they're good friends.
Yeah.
I think it's beneficial for them for me to mention them on this podcast. Listen to this about Victor Hovland.
It's huge for them for you to mention it. Really.
It could make them.
Yeah.
Like, all right, it's all well and good getting in with Ryder Cup teams and all that sort of stuff, but this is the turning point in their business model. And for free. Not even a sponsorship, though we would take a secondary sponsorship. Like, now we could have two sponsors. It could be like the Champions League and have a whole list of sponsors. Anyways, something for off-air just to consider. Not a big meeting. Victor Hovland, right? So making his first start in the European Tour this week. Some of his statistics. So he couldn't really fit into the end of season stats in terms of strokes gained because he didn't play enough tournaments. But if he did, his averages in strokes gained off the tee, approach, tee to green, and total strokes gained would all have been in the top five on the PGA Tour last season. He would have led the tour in greens in regulation. Seven starts across all tours, hasn't finished outside the top 20. He's recorded 17 straight PGA Tour rounds in the 60s, the longest such streak since records began in 1983.
Wow.
I'm going to say he's good.
Wow.
That's not bad.
No, not bad at
and
all.
And obviously was a low amateur at the Masters and the US Open.
Very impressive. We'll see how he gets on this week at Wentworth. Peter Laurie is standing by. Hello, Peter.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for joining us.
All the way from sunny La Cala. Just checking in with you guys, you know, did up the sponsorship deal and I'm sitting here in La Cala enjoying myself.
Looks like it. Looks nice and sunny.
You're in your house.
I'm in my house, that's right.
Beautiful Castle Knock.
I couldn't be there. Yes.
You're Castle Knock, are you?
I am indeed. Not born and bred, no. Yeah. Moved over to the north side when I married my wife. So had to move to the north side from a Southsider.
So are you going to give us the tour of the Peter Laurie Gaff? Have you any memorabilia up around the house? Have you a giant 6-foot poster of when you hold that putt to win the Spanish Open?
No, nothing like that. Nothing like that.
Are you not like Harrington? Have you got your Spanish Open trophy on the kitchen table?
No, Spanish Open trophy is in Newlands Golf Club, where I grew up. I donated it to them. So it's sitting in their trophy cabinet there.
Have you any painting or poster of yourself in your house? Be honest.
My wife put up a few small photographs only recently along the hallway.
No, I asked for a painting or a poster. Is there a painting of you
in
your house?
There is no painting or poster of me in my house.
We're going to follow up on that. We're going to follow up on that.
I'll give you the tour, no problem.
One of the tweets in was asking, how much equipment doping is the phrase he used, but choose whatever phrase you want. How much equipment doping does Peter think is going on?
I would have said very little, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I know a lot of guys would be sort of searching for that fast driver out there. But in relation to that, that's probably about it. I can't see, there's nothing else that can really, you know, other than the driver is the main thing to get distance. There's no club out there that's going to put the ball in the hole with the putter or a wedge that's, you know, non-conventional.
Oh, sounds like a very stock answer, you know. the club camp at the ball in the hole for you.
You know me. I'll say it as it is.
And would players be having conversations with club makers saying, is there an edge we can get? Is there a boundary we can push?
There's a few manufacturers out there that I would have said that go to the very limit of what is regulations, and then others are very safe. So you would have seen a lot of the guys searching for a little bit of length, certainly going to those manufacturers who are on the limit of the rules.
And isn't it correct that you can get a club fresh off the rack that is on the limit, and then through the course of playing that changes certain specifications in the club, and it can become, it can cross a line weirdly just through some kind of wear and tear?
Very possibly, yes. You know, you could get a golf club that has a slight crack in it that has created like a trampoline effect for you. Mm. But in general, I don't think it's something that is major on tour.
Yeah.
So it's very, very in the minute scale of things.
So Wentworth, we'll get on to various aspects of this. You would have played Wentworth many a year, I'm sure. I was there about 5-6 years ago and just was blown away by the place. It's kind of fantastic. This was one of the better weeks on tour, I would presume.
Oh, one of my favourite weeks of the year. Golf course that you have to shape the ball around. It always played quite hard and fast. And I actually started very well in an awful lot of PGA championships, and I only really finished it off well once. I finished fourth there a couple of years ago to, I think, Luke Donald won it in the end. But yeah, fantastic golf course.
What makes it good? So you have to shape it for sure, and it's beautiful to look at. Why didn't you manage to finish it off? Does it catch you? Like, is it tough? Is it regarded as tough?
Oh, it's one of the toughest that you'll play. The finishing holes are exceptionally difficult. 15, 16, 17, and 18 now is probably plays the easier that it has ever played over the years. But there's a really couple, you know, the 14th up the hill, the par 3, then you go 15, 16, 17, are all really tough, you know, tough golf holes.
You don't really see it as much on TV, but having been there, some of the houses off the fairways are just unbelievable.
Phenomenal.
The wealth in that part of the world is incredible.
Unbelievable. The houses, and then spectators that they get there as well. But for you to be a member, I think, of Wentworth is, I know I think it was the Japanese or Chinese came in to buy it, your membership went up $100,000 per year. When they took it over. So you have to be a very wealthy to be a member of Wentworth.
Yeah, and the surrounding area is just owned by various princes from the Middle East.
Oh, it's
Chinese
insane.
Consortiums and royalty.
I've driven past Wentworth. I've been to Ascot and to Windsor on a couple of occasions, and that part of the world is just...
It's not for our types, Nathan.
No.
You mentioned the tough finish. Rory McIlroy started so well today. He has finished ultimately plus four. So you would say his tournament is already pretty much approaching over, and he started off with an eagle on the par 5 fourth, followed up by a birdie on the next hole. He was flying, and then went bogey on 8, bogey on 9, bogey on 10, did manage a birdie on 12, but then went bogey on 13, bogey on 15, and then the two closing par 5s, he had a double bogey on the 17th, and then on 18 lost his ball off the tee and had a bogey there. So it's a 76, a pretty appalling back 9 of 42, Peter Lawrie, for Rory McIlroy.
You just can't play the back nine of Wentworth if you draw the ball. You have to put it in play, and you have to hit it up. You know where he made bogeys. You have to hit it up the right side of the fairway. Mm. 17 in particular, where he made double. You have to keep it from the out of bounds on the left hand side. And then 18, it's a kind of a new tee shot now. In 18, if you take driver out, you have to sort of be very careful not to lose it right in the trees. It's a tough finish, as I said, and if you're not hitting the ball well off the tee, you're going to have big numbers there.
So you're saying there you can't play the back nine if you're drawing the ball, but McIlroy's proven time and time again he can play the back nine at Wentworth. He won this in 2014, came from 7 shots back to win it in the final round. He was runner-up a year ago. Generally, it seems he does have the way around this course. I know it's a very different time of year. From what you've seen, is the course playing very differently because it's in September compared to its usual May slot?
The only difference will be the greens. They won't get that kind of bobbly sensation out of them that they normally do earlier on in the year. So you should see the greens being a whole lot truer now this time of year. But the weather's been fantastic. So really, you know, there should be no difference whatsoever between May to September.
Shane Lowry, by the way, has finished in level par. He was playing with McIlroy, so he was there firsthand to watch that. And McIlroy said, by the way, in the build-up this week, that he will play in next year's Irish Open after missing the tournament last year. The Irish Open is always going to be not just a possibility, but, you know, I felt that my best preparation for the Open this year was to play the Scottish and not play the one before. Obviously, in hindsight, I probably should have played at La Hinch. This is what he said yesterday. But you live and learn. You make these decisions. You've got to live with them. Yeah, I'll be playing the Irish Open next year. I most likely won't play Abu Dhabi or Dubai. I'm going to take basically all of December and most of January off, start in the States, probably give myself that time to sort of rest and reset and then go again. So I think going forward, you're going to see more of the top guys doing that. So he said, I said I wouldn't miss the Irish Open 2 years in a row, so people can expect to see me there, no matter when or where it's scheduled. And then he said it wouldn't be ideal for it to clash with the WGC. And that seems to be the issue, obviously, for the Irish Open next year. It does, at the moment, clash with the WGC FedEx Invitational. So now there is talk of moving the Irish Open back to May. And everybody's talking about Mount Juliet. Even last night I was hearing whispers Mount Juliet. I presume you're hearing those whispers, Peter?
I certainly heard there's a big discussion going on between Mount Juliet and the European Tour. I think they're down to a contract stage at this moment in time. So if you're a local, start renting your house out.
And is that for that May slot?
I haven't heard a date.
Because the other possibility was that they would have it at this time of the year, just before Wentworth. And actually, I don't think that is the worst idea, because Wentworth, while it's this huge tournament and we're very much entering in a European Tour time of the season, it feels as though there was no great momentum building up to it. Whereas if you had an Irish Open and you had a lot of big name players, maybe you'd have a proper European Tour swing in September when the weather is still decent. Like, it's incredible how we flipped on the Irish Open, that for so long it was felt as though this slot just before the Open Championship was the mecca for the Irish Open. And in many ways it has worked, but it hasn't brought the American players, I think, that they had hoped, that link swing. And going back to May, like, the problem with May is that often in Ireland it's bloody freezing.
Yeah, I'm very torn on it, May or September. It feels like the air goes out of the golfing season a bit after the last major. Like, whoever wins or whoever shows good form, it doesn't feel as important or noteworthy, because frankly the next major isn't until April. What about you, Peter? May or September? What puts the most juice in the Irish Open?
I think they have either two choices. The week before the Open, I think if they could get it from the Scottish Open, I would go for that.
They can't get that. It's going to have to be 2 weeks.
Well, I don't know. I don't agree with it. They can't get it, to be totally honest with you.
Well, they clearly can't, though, because if they could, they would.
Not necessarily. Well, it all depends if they're going to outbid the Scottish.
Are Aberdeen, Aberdeen Nassau, they're massive sponsors, though, aren't they? And they've got a few marquee names and they're fairly well ensconced.
I'd agree. But I would say, you know, never say never.
Okay.
But September is a good month. Weather-wise, over the last few years, we've had very good weather in September. So, you know, it would be very nice to play it in September. But there again, we're going to be moving away from a links style, you know, or what we should be, you know, sending out there to the tourists and to the Americans and whoever else, you know. Ireland is, it's all about our links golf courses. And it would be lovely for the European Tour to play in the links before the Open.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree. I can't say, Mount Juliet is lovely, obviously. But
can I make one point there, links, though?
Just, yeah,
you were talking about McIlroy. He did say he was going to play in the Olympics and didn't. So I wouldn't be putting too much money on him playing in the Irish Open.
Really?
That's my point of view.
I once again feel this week that you can't get enough of Rory McIlroy in press conferences. He probably does too many press conferences, but there's always something interesting. And like, even the, and well, look, it is a golf podcast, so you can get into the sort of technicalities of rules around the European Tour. McIlroy as an exception, how there's one rule for one and one rule for others. So he was talking about this year and not playing in La Hinch. I had to laugh there again. Like, if there's a Rory McIlroy motto,
yeah,
it's, give me the quote.
He said, I know exactly the one you're looking for because I read it and was like, yeah, that's the one I've seen every kind of 6 months after something blows up.
Live and learn. Live and learn is the Rory McIlroy motto.
Obviously, in hindsight, yeah, that's the other one. I probably should have played Lynch, but you live and learn.
Live and learn.
You
make, like, that
these,
is Rory
you make
McIlroy.
These decisions, you've got to live with them.
So we said at the time, don't be surprised if 6 months later McIlroy's coming out going, ah, maybe I should have just played Lynch. And sure enough. But he was talking about sort of the European Tour rules. So he's taken on membership of the European Tour again, said his wife Erica changed his mind. It's interesting, he sort of hinted at a lot of the rumours around why McIlroy stepped away from the Irish Open and the issues that were there with the European Tour. He said, you know, what are you trying to do? What sort of point are you trying to prove? So he met with Keith Pelley, and the rule is that you have to play two extra events if you don't play your home open. So Pelley and I sat down. I said, Keith, I can't possibly do that. McIlroy said Pelley countered with a proposal that would allow the 30-year-old to play three of the circuit's Rolex Series events instead. I said, done, 100% done. Once we had that conversation, it was totally fine.
Yeah.
So actually, there's no real rule that you have to play two extra events if you just go, well, I'm not going to do that. So not only are you not going to have me for the Irish Open, you're not going to have me for any of these championships. They'll slightly bend the rules for their biggest star.
It's fair enough, you know. It's okay.
But from McIlroy's point of view, it's absolutely. I'm sure for your run-of-the-mill European Tour player, it's absolutely infuriating.
But don't you just have to accept the reality in life and in sport that there are just different statures of people, different statures in 100%. Every profession? And it's a pragmatic decision from the European Tour. I think it's a good decision. And
you know,
I'm sure the rank-and-file European Tour, Peter, are having a good bitching session in the locker room, but, like, unfortunately, them's the breaks. McIlroy is of a different stature.
I was at the meeting when we decided to put an extra two events onto anybody who didn't play their home open.
Yeah.
And it went around the table, and it was actually George O'Grady who brought it down to two. Around the table, it was a lot more. I remember Jimenez said seven,
which come on,
which was laughed at. But at the time, it was basically based around Robert Carlsen and Henrik Stenson not playing in Sweden, and the Swedish Open was dying, and none of the Swedish players were playing, or the top Swedish lads were playing. And it was trying to force them back to play in their home open.
Okay.
And it really didn't come up to, you know, it hasn't reared its ugly head until McIlroy didn't play in the Irish Open. But going back to that committee meeting, there was an awful lot of feeling around the table that, you know, you had to play in your Irish Open. There was no excuses. You know, you played in your home open. So for him to now circumvent the rules, you'd see a lot of guys being a little bit annoyed, to put it mildly.
Do you think it's the right pragmatic decision ultimately?
No, I don't. I think if it's your home open, you should have to play in it, unless you're injured, of course. But you shouldn't get the option to not play it and then play the week later, and then say, well, if you play in a few of the Rolex events, which is Keith Pelley is struggling to push these Rolex events out again. I think it's been a failed idea and system. They haven't gone from strength to strength. If anything, they've got weaker. The money has got bigger, but the field sizes and the field strengths have got weaker. So it proves the point that no matter how much money you put on the table for prize money, it doesn't bring the best players.
I love that Jimenez said seven. Were you like, bloody right, Angel, I'm with you. What kind of fella is Jimenez?
I used to wind them all up. It was great. Jimenez was brilliant. He was very difficult to understand at the meeting.
Cigar in the mouth the whole time.
I give you one. There was a player who a couple of years ago, he moved a marker. Or sorry, he was marking his ball and he tapped down a spike mark. You don't need to name him, but you probably know who he is. And he got banned on the European Tour. He got fined, and then he wasn't suspended but got a fine. And I remember Jimenez banging the table and shouting, he's shit, he's shit, he's shit. And he didn't mean the word S-H-I-T. He meant he cheated. So he cheat, he cheat. But it sounded like he's shit, he's shit. So that was Jimenez. He was all for the European Tour. He was all for everything being correct and forcing the players to do pretty much what he did, was to support the tour. And if you didn't support the tour, then you weren't in his good books.
It seems like the Ryder Cup captaincy might just pass him by. Is it his English? Is it something else?
I think it was a disgrace that he didn't get it. It was one of those things that he should have got. He should have been more pushy for it. But in the end, they gave the excuse that it was his English. My point to that was, it's the European Tour. Why does he need to speak English? He can have an interpreter. And possibly he would have been better off with an interpreter, because even when he speaks Spanish, the Spanish lads said with his accent, he's quite difficult to understand anyway.
Nobody understands him.
Well, other than himself, of course. But
Was it politics or why wouldn't he have got it then? So I accept he wasn't pushy it enough, but
it was pure politics. Absolutely. And it's just disappointing for the career that he's had. He didn't get the Ryder Cup captaincy.
Rather bizarre situation. Don't know if I mentioned this to you. On the final day of the Open Championship up in Portrush, involving Miguel Angel Jimenez. So it's midday. It's about an hour before the leaders tee off. Shane Lowry is just walking to the driving range. So he steps up. Brooks Koepka is there. Jordan Spieth is there. It's a beautiful place to be, just sitting watching them all interact and hit their shots. And right there in the middle, standing 2 feet away from Shane Lowry, is Miguel Angel Jimenez, not hitting balls, putting balls on a tee for who I can only assume is his son, who is smacking balls. Jimenez has got the cigar. Jimenez had then taped the club off him. He'd hit 3 or 4 balls, hand it back to the son again. He'd spend 20 minutes hitting balls, literally 2 bays down from where Shane Lowry is, preparing to go out in the final round. At first I was thinking, because when I saw him first, I was going, jeez, I didn't realise Jimenez was some way in contention.
Yeah.
4 over par, missed the cut. I can only assume he was maybe preparing for the Senior Open, which is on the next week. But to go out, literally, as the leaders are on the tee box, and anyone who was up in Portrush will know, this was a bloody big driving range. Could have gone right over to the corner where no one would see you. No, stood right in the middle of all the leaders. I'm fairly sure it was his son. He's just there hitting balls like he's down in Spawell.
Does that sound like Jimenez to you, Peter?
It does indeed, yeah.
Is it just, does not care? Is his own man, does whatever he wants?
I think what Nathan is describing is there is somebody who would actually, have a conscious thought of what's going on around him. Okay. Jimenez would be very much, well, I'm doing this, I'm not, I'm not in anybody's way. I'm not doing anything. So what's wrong with it?
Maybe he has a point.
Yeah, it's just that mentality, you know.
So, that's Roy. Look, he's a European Tour member again, albeit they've bended the rules ever so slightly. Just to finish up on the men's game, because I want to talk Solheim Cup as well. Harrington revealed his first vice-captain. He's gone for Robert Karlsson. 11 professional wins. He was the number one European for a time. Very low profile publicly. I don't think I've ever really had much of a conversation about Karlsson, but very clearly he's held in high esteem at European Tour level. Will he be a future captain, or is that ship also, say, because all these superstar big European names now are coming to an age, has that ship passed by Karlsson?
I would have said so, yes. He's kind of out of the limelight now. I think Porik would be bringing Robert in. He would know Robert quite well. Robert is a refined person. He wouldn't be involved, with too many people. But he'd be very intellectual. He'd know what he's talking about. Has strong opinions on certain topics. And I think he'd be a very good vice captain. I don't think he'll ever be captain.
Yeah.
No, you'd imagine the way it's going right now is Poulter, Westwood. And then you're probably looking at one of McDowell or Donald missing out, because Garcia will be in there as well. You just think, for a player of Robert Karlsson's stature, it has passed him by.
Mm. I would agree with that one. He's not playing much anymore. Mm. He pretty much is.
He had a problem with his eyesight, didn't he?
Semi-retired.
That was the problem for Karlsson. It all just fell off a cliff. He had a problem with his eyesight. That massively affected his game.
I hadn't heard that.
A couple of other bits just before we talk about the Solheim.
Yeah.
I know what you've been sitting here thinking, oh, long winter months. Remember that glorious night when Tiger played Phil? for all that money. What entertainment that was. Do you know what we need? We need more made-for-TV spectacles.
The Match Part 2?
Not quite. American viewers can look forward, Joe, to watching a new four-man skins exhibition in Japan featuring Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
And I quote here, newly minted FedEx Cup champion Rory McIlroy. The event, which is called The Challenge, Japan Skins, also features Jason Day and Hideki Matsuyama.
Jason Day.
And is going to be played ahead of the inaugural Zozo Championship.
Wow.
Jason Day's getting in there because they're saying to Tiger, who doesn't annoy you? Yeah, Jason Day. Hmm. Bring him in. Bring him in.
Why aren't these things ever good? Like, you know, this has been billed as something a bit different and mic them up and access and blah, blah, blah. Why don't they work? Like, we have a producers meeting about this now. Why
sport
doesn't
in general doesn't matter unless it means something.
Mm.
And that's part of the problem golf has in general right now, that the way they have done this new season, they've sort of said the majors are everything. That's all that means something. So even though we're here at Wentworth and we're heading into, I think this is the first of five Rolex Series events between now and December, as you said, there's a feeling that the season is done.
Yeah.
Everything that's to be won has been won. Everything that will decide what the history of this year is.
But like the selling point for this thing is not that it means anything. Everybody understands it's meaningless. The selling point would be you're going to get a sense of their character and personality and you're going to get some inside access into, one, how they play golf, as in better mic'd up conversations with the caddy, and two, how they interact. And that was one of the selling points of Mickelson and Tiger. And I almost thought, I remember watching that. I was out. I distinctly remember you and Fiona watching it. And I remember I was going to get home and see what this is like and press and play and watching the first tee, and they're walking up the first fairway. And I thought, right, here we go. They're going to start telling, you know, they've at least done some semblance of, oh, we should talk about that Ryder Cup at some stage, and on that, you know, we should have these five or six things. Let's talk about them. But it's the most awkward walking up the fairway, and all they said about 18 times to each other with long gaps in between was, man, Samuel L. Jackson back there, he's really cool, isn't he?
He's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
So cool.
His kids are there. Like, we're not cool dads.
No.
He's a cool dad.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's so cool. Yeah. So cool, isn't he? Yeah.
He is.
You know, and so I don't know, can producers get in there and say, like, the point of this is we're going to listen to you guys talk and get something.
Phil, if you said a Tiger, wow, can you imagine we're doing this? Remember, like, 15 years ago.
When we hated each other.
When we hated each other, like.
Is it true in your book your mom calls me Fat Phil? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, but everyone else calls you Fake Phil.
Totally. So, but it seems like that bit is always missing, Peter, with these mic'd up things. I no longer get excited by the mic'd up stuff.
No, they're terrible, to be honest with you. What would work far better is to go back to both of you, so probably I'm going to show my age here now, is a remember Peter Alice did a round with Alice, where he played a couple of holes with the different celebrities and actually got something out of them.
Mm.
I think that's lacking. I think somebody should go out there and do a mini TV series where they can actually get the pros out and hit a few shots and actually ask them some questions that people want to hear, rather than Phil or Tiger or Jason Day or, you know, Hideki Matsuyama. Like, what are we going to get from him around, you know, a golf tournament?
Well, I asked him once if he liked Ireland, and he said yeah, so.
Yeah, well, there you go.
You turned into Ryan Tuberty for 5 minutes, did you?
Yeah, so.
It's a great idea, Peter. So, if only there was a former professional golfer with an interest in the media and all these contacts who could just make better use of them.
I just got to use some of you guys' sponsorship and I might be okay.
We could record it in Lacala.
Lacala, Keith.
Yeah.
In the
yeah.
sunshine.
So, well, I'm excited for that, Nathan. That's great. That's going to be on American TV. Is that pay-per-view? Surely not.
Do you think Shane Lowry enjoyed the posters for his three ball, which had Shane Lowry very much front and centre and Rory McIlroy as the guy on the side?
Ooh, I'd say like that, yeah. I'd say that was noted by the McIlroy people. By the way, you know what McIlroy, when he always says, I made a mistake? I get the point you're making. But I also think there is something admirable about someone who does
hold
their hands up and say, yeah, I probably got that wrong. Now,
I just find it strange that, not that he hasn't learned his lesson, but that he goes so bullheaded into things and, yes, absolutely, I am doing this and no way will I regret it. This is the best thing for my career. And then 6 months later, yeah, you know, maybe I, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah,
I know. But he never learns. He never learns.
Well, it's always different issues. Yeah, thing.
Like, he does learn. Fairness he to just...
But I like that he comes out and says, yeah, could have got that wrong. Because there's nothing worse than an arrogance to say, well, I was never wrong.
Oh, no, there is. Know? And like the one thing with Rory, and again, we're looking at it from one side of the fence, and you don't want to be, listen, Rory, the best thing for you to do is just keep the head down between now and the Masters, not do a single press conference. Tell Nike, listen, when I win the Grand Slam, you can have me for 3 days and everything's fine, but I'm literally not doing one press event.
Yeah.
So he was asked the question, which we were debating, of would you swap your season for Brooks Koepka's season? And he said, no.
Ah, come on.
He said, the only person's season I would swap.
Shane Lowry's.
No.
Hang on. Not Shane Lowry's. Oh, I know who. Tiger Woods.
Yes. So again, you're right. Back to...
The Masters. Right.
But I thought Port Rush meant so much to you. Would you not say Lowry and Tiger? But no, it's just Tiger, which means all I'm thinking about is the Masters. Masters,
yeah. But again, look, he's interesting. There's no one else's press conference we've even dared mention here.
Like, interesting. Literally every single week.
Yeah.
We get a full... I'd say if you go back to our podcast, it's Rory Plays... There's definitely a podcast.
Oh, definitely. So, that's the situation in the men's at the moment. Matt Wallace has made a good start, as has Stenson and John Rahm and Fleetwood, so we'll keep an eye on that. There is the Sanderson Open this evening, the Sanderson Farms Championship, rather, in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi. Joaquin Niemann, who won last week, I was watching, it was terrible, but it wasn't bad. So, fair play to him, he won and won really well last week. He's in as the favourite for the Sanderson Farms Championship. Brant Snedeker, Lucas Glover's there. Corey Connors is there, Nathan. I know you're a big Corey
Connors Glover's
fan.
Third favourite.
Fourth favourite.
Oh, my God.
Sung Jae Im is third. Scotty Scheffler is playing, of course. JT Poston.
Oh, yeah, JT. My boy.
Solheim Cup. 14.5 points to 13.5 points. Suzanne Pedersen.
Oh.
Ay, caramba. This was unbelievably impressive finish from Pedersen. Bronte Law and Pedersen. It was there were echoes of Killeen Castle 2011, where the Europeans had to win the last three matches in the singles. And Bronte Law got her bit of business done brilliantly. And then it all came down to Pedersen against Marina Alex. And if Alex had birdied the last, then it would have rendered Pedersen's putt irrelevant. However, she didn't. And Pedersen had to step up. She... spun a ball in kind of 20 feet ahead of the pin that came back and beneath the pin, had about 8 feet if you didn't see it. Incredible drama, the whole thing coming down to this one putt. Obviously the Europeans starved of success in this competition, and Pedersen, 38 years of age, hasn't basically played in 2 years, stepped up and rolled in the putt brilliantly and pretty much announced her retirement straight away afterwards. This is the perfect end to my career. Peter, you've stood over those kind of putts. The pressure, they are not easy. Like, it was an incredible finale, and she's kind of enshrined herself into legendary status now.
Absolutely. And look, it wasn't it great that she actually didn't realise what it was for at the time? She knew her match was very important, but I don't think she realised that it was for the actual Solheim Cup. But she played the 18th perfectly, you know, hit it past the hole, spun it back. Her opposition hit it past the hole, didn't come back, left a very difficult putt. That 18th green in Glen Eagles was treacherous. Wasn't it brilliant that she could come back after 2 years, play to the standard that's there, win, retire, and she'd be known forever as the girl who won the Solheim Cup? Like, you just don't get that. It's a fairy tale.
Yeah. The tournament as a whole.
One thing about the Solheim Cup, and it's amazing when you talk to people that are coming into the driving range, and I'm not trying to plug the driving range at all, but when they're coming in and you're talking about what's happening on the telly and what's happening on the golf, an awful lot of the men who come into the driving range were amazed at the Solheim Cup, that probably their first experience of the year of watching ladies golf, and they were describing it that they could relate to golf that the ladies play much better than they can relate to the men's game. And they could learn so much more from the ladies, the way they swing the club and the way they their course management, etc., on the golf course. So it was nice to note that the ladies were actually getting that little bit of coverage, which they don't get from week to week. And actually, here's guys who wouldn't normally watch ladies golf were enthralled in this Solheim Cup. I could actually learn something from it too.
100%. I'm genuinely getting to the point where I prefer watching ladies golf to men's. No exaggeration. I know the characters in men's much better, and I'm more into who wins the majors and the men's, but actually that's all I'm cup. I tried to watch as much of it as possible. It's far more relatable. The game is now not just a bombing contest. There's some horror show mistakes thrown in as well. Like, I mean, you know, there were 8 of the world's top 10 missing. These were not the absolute elite of the game. I've no problem with that because golf's a difficult sport. I thought it was just great. The one thing was how slow it was. That's been criticised. They were on course for 6-hour rounds, and they don't always finish the rounds. But if they had all finished, I think the average would have been close to 6 hours.
Yeah. Like, ladies golf has a couple of huge problems. We shouldn't be talking negatively about it, considering it's just provided what in many ways will be one of the sporting moments of the year in terms of sheer drama. One of the main problems is slow play, that when you do sit down and the main ladies event you'd find yourself watching are probably the majors, and boy, do they drag on. That, again, you're looking at like 3 hours for the back nine of a major championship, which, particularly in this part of the world, means you're dragging on well past midnight. But the other problem, I think, particularly in this part of the world, and we touched on it with Stephanie Meadow last week, is the lack of a real European tour means that there's very few people, if anybody, watching ladies golf in this part of the world, because the only option you have to watch it is the American coverage, and that's always going up against the men's coverage, which means Sky are generally always showing the men's event.
It's never on.
And they'll probably show an hour, an hour and a half afterwards at 1 in the morning. Yeah. But that's it. So there's no real chance for, as is part of the campaigns of see it, be it, of people looking on and going, wow, this is brilliant.
Yeah,
I want to go and play.
I know, like, I think
it's simply not an opportunity.
I think it'd be great if Sky showed better highlights even. If they don't want to put it on instead of PGA Tour, I get that.
But, oh, like Suzanne Pedersen, it's funny you compare it to Colleen Castle. I always remember working down at Colleen Castle and covering that Solheim Cup, and we were doing a special show, and we finished at 5 to 6, and I think my last words were, USA are on the verge of lifting the Solheim Cup. And we came back straight after the news for a bulletin, I think about 4 minutes later, and was Europe have just won the Solheim Cup. It swung that quickly, and it was the exact same. We were sitting here on Sunday, and you're looking at it going, they need to win the final two matches. They're both all square.
Yeah.
And for it to come down, like, first time since Keogh Island, 1991, Bernard Langer, that either the Solheim Cup or the Ryder Cup has been won by a putt on the 18th. And for it to be Suzanne Pedersen, who's probably had more history in a million different ways with the Solheim Cup than anybody else, I wonder, can she
be tempted back?
Because once the buzz goes, and like she had spoken to some good interviews out there with her of her time on maternity leave and her obsession with golf pre having a child, how she'd literally be waking up in the middle of the night practicing her swing, something had come to her in a dream or in her head, and she'd be straight out of bed and thinking she's found the secret. That level of obsession to never thinking to be anything else, and talking about having a child and going, actually, you know, I haven't really missed it. I found another outlet in my life. But when you've got to that level, when you can win a Solheim Cup with little or no golf under your belt, you'd wonder in 6 months when the buzz wears off, do you go, I can still go out and do something, prove myself?
And she'd probably get a pick again. Sorry, Peter, you were going to come in there on something.
Oh, you've thrown me.
We were talking about the coverage, I think, or the fact that we don't actually see all that much of it.
Yeah, the Ladies European Tour has struggled for many, many years now, and they really have. They lose their players to America, of course, but they don't show any coverage of it. There's little or no sponsors whatsoever, so you know, it's very difficult for anybody to watch it, to anybody to relate to ladies golf. And something has to be done. Something has to improve towards whether they play, you know, two tournaments a month. But I remember down in Morocco, they used to play the King Hassan Trophy. And then they used to play the ladies event on a different golf course. And they were paying, you see the girls there, and they were in the same boat that we were, you know, staying in a hotel, flying over, and they're playing for buttons in comparison to what we were playing for. And that was one of the very small tournaments on the European Tour. So it must be a huge struggle for the ladies to even motivate themselves, especially young girls coming up. Well, there's no money in the game. There's no sponsors. They get their game to a certain level and then they've nowhere to go.
Yeah, it's true. In fairness, Sky did a really good job of the coverage. It was good.
And there's a good proper rivalry. Even I was watching the opening ceremony, and Julie Inkster, the US captain, stood up to make her speech. And it was all very much about the growth of women's sport and what a summer it has been for women's sport. And you were expecting her to go through the various different events, But it was all just American, so it was...
World Cup,
first out, and I thought, oh yeah, that's obviously the biggest female sporting event of the summer. That's fine to mention. I think she mentioned six of them, all of which were Americans winning. And by the end of it, you could tell all the Europeans were, so you're not so much for ladies' sport, you're for Americans winning.
That's great. My favourite moment of the whole thing is when someone shouts four at Lexi Thompson's ball.
Oh,
she magic. Just gives... Lexi Thompson's... I love watching Lexi Thompson golf, because there's a kind of... certainly the Solomon, there was a grumpiness about her. Mm. And she was struggling with her game as well. She was blocking everything right all the time. But she turned to him with just the most withering look and was saying, Jesus, it's not that bad.
my favourite moment, guys, and this epitomises golf, I think, is when Suzanne Pedersen hold the putt. There was no fist punch. There was no aggression. She turned around to her playing partner and gave her playing partner a hug. And that's what golf is all about. It gets rid of the polter, footballisms, which I hate, I have to admit. I'm probably one of the few people who hate it. But it's just
Do you not enjoy the middle-aged golfers beating their chest as if they're about to get into a fight and looking intimidating and everything? No,
it's just hilarious, isn't it? Really, it really is.
Listen, we got to go. Thanks so much for checking in from your mansion in Castleknock.
Okay. I wish. Apologies for not being there.
Not at all. You're all very right. Good. And best to everyone at the Peter Lawrie Academy at Spawell.
No, Spawell Golf Academy. No, come Peter Lawrie Golf Academy.
Thanks. Cheers. Thanks. Bye-bye. By the way, before we go, Shane Lowry did a pretty good interview with John Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
Golf Digest. We're checking out just about winning the Open, memories of the whole
thing.
Did
you enjoy it?
He had a good time. He's like, I didn't drink that much. You know, it looked like I was just in the session the whole time. I was very, very kind of determined to take it all in. So it wasn't like I was out of my brain or anything. Interestingly, Hogan goes, anything surprise you about the trophy? He's like, there's actually a mistake on it. I'm not sure I should say this, but when Fred Daly won in 47, he won at Hoylake. Whereas in the trophy, it says he won at Holy Lake. Porrig told me about it. When I showed him the trophy, he said, yep, that's the one. And then he talked about just the history of seeing it. And he's like, seeing Tom Morris, 1872. Still, I think, a bit blown away by the whole thing. And it's a good interview for people who love their golf. For instance, you get into stuff like this. Your short game has always been one of the best parts of your game. Do you have any idea how you pitch and chip, or does it all feel? And talks about it's just feel. He said, this year I wasn't chipping very well, and purely by playing around with it myself, I came up with a solution. I weakened my left-hand grip. That made the club face less strong. So when I needed a spinny chip, I go with that grip. It's stuff like that, which is nice to get a real insight into his game. Do you like rough around the greens or tight lies? He said, not rough. Take Medina, US Open style rough around the greens. Everyone just opens the club face, hits the ball hard. There's no subtlety to it. I like when the ball runs away from the greens. That takes the bad chippers out of it. Mm. Stuff like that. It's good. It's in Golf Digest.
It's going to be a long 6 months for him, I suspect. While in one way it's brilliant that you're the most recent major champion for a long time. Every tournament he plays, and he's going to play a lot on the European Tour over the next while.
Yeah.
He's going to have to do a press conference. And we know Shane Lowry in this country a certain way. The rest of the world doesn't. And even there was a headline in one of the papers yesterday saying...
A fluke.
Lowry doesn't need green jacket to show open win was a fluke.
Yeah. He won't like that.
Nobody. Yeah. Nobody thinks that Shane Lowry's win was a fluke.
No.
Because we've seen Shane Lowry. We know exactly what he was capable of. But you can, in a way, understand in other parts of the world, he's just another golfer.
Yeah.
That they're thinking, well, where did this guy come from?
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. He's not a dominant figure. And I hope he doesn't get pissed off with that side of it. I've constantly been asked, he was talking of, oh, everyone spends your life saying, when are you going to win a major? And then you win one. Well, when are you going to win another one? Instead of just pausing.
Mm.
That's unfortunately the nature of, I guess, journalism as much as anything else.
It's true. It's an obvious question, but when it's asked 4,000 times, it will get annoying. Mm. That is us done again. Don't forget to enter our competition we mentioned at the top. Very nice prize. And the show brought to you with thanks to La Cala, Spain's largest golf resort, Irish owned by FBD Hotels and Resorts. Out near Mijas in southern Spain. That is us done. Nathan Murphy, thank you. We'll put our Adair Manor review pod up in the next day or so as well.
Should we, Joe, as a bonus for our podcast listeners at the end of this?
Here we go.
Bit of work for you.
No, this is the
Can
answer.
You imagine this,
no,
Joe?
Is the
Can
answer.
You imagine this, right? Myself and yourself, how long have we been doing this for? A long time.
25 years.
Actual PGA Tour golfer was in studio on Tuesday.
Oh yeah, we missed
an
him.
Actual PGA Tour golfer was in studio on Tuesday, and Richie McCormack, who literally
hates golf,
to say he hates golf is putting it mildly. Every time it's mentioned,
even during Major Week,
he
kicks off.
He interviewed Troy Merritt, two-time PGA Tour winner.
It's actually a disgrace. It's a disgrace.
It's outrageous.
No, it's outrageous. Yes, no, the news was not greeted with joy. So there you go. Troy Merritt was in studio this very week.
Merritt.
Richie McCormack sat there and told him how much he hates golf.
Yeah.
Okay, we're done. I got to go. You got to go. We'll see you next week.